Gaetz, the biggest firebrand inside of the House of Representatives.
You're not taking Matt Gaetz off the board, okay? Because Matt Gaetz is an American patriot and Matt Gaetz is an American hero.
We will not continue to allow the Uniparty to run this town without a fight.
I want to thank you, Matt Gaetz, for holding the line.
Matt Gaetz is a courageous man. If we had hundreds of Matt Gaetz in D.C., the country turns around. It's that simple.
He's so tough. He's so strong. He's smart, and he loves this country. Matt Gaetz.
It is the honor of my life to fight alongside each and every one of you. We will save America. It's Choose Your Fighter time. Send in the firebrands. I was so furious but not surprised when I saw the Bloomberg News report that the Biden administration is now considering draining $200 million out of Army reserves to send more money to Ukraine. The move would target reserve funds that this House has authorized and appropriated for this particular purpose, a purpose that is worthy, certainly more worthy, than continuing involvement in the conflict in Ukraine that could lead to tragic escalatory accident. And I can't even believe this is a controversial view to take on this floor, but I believe that the U.S. Army reserves should actually be for the U.S. Army. And by the way, it's not as if we don't have needs for our Army. How about the families of our soldiers? Right now, childcare is a real problem. We've got Army soldiers that are driving an hour and a half or more each way just to drop off their kids at childcare. We could invest that money in our military families. I could take you to the Army town of Crestview, Florida, in my district, where the school counselors who are still helping Army families deal with the lingering effects of just deployment after deployment after deployment. They could use more resources. They tell me, Congressman, if we had more resources for these Army families, they could improve quality of life and improve mental health. And not for nothing, but the Army was taking a leading role in hypersonics for our country, where we have fallen behind China. If we've got an extra $200 million laying around the Army, how about we invest it in making sure that with hypersonic weapons, we can hit a moving target? I don't know, like China can. But no, indeed, we see this attempt to drain resources away for Ukraine. When Joe Biden talked about campaigning for the soul of the nation, I just assumed it was our nation, not Ukraine. And Ukraine is no Garden of Eden for democracy. Senator Lee pointed out in a report that the CIA had to directly confront Zelensky about his own personal corruption. In Ukraine, they've canceled the presidential elections. Call me old-fashioned, but I actually prefer democracies that hold elections rather than canceling elections. And while there were many concerns about the death of Navalny appropriately, people forget the fact that Zelensky jailed a journalist, Gonzalo Lira, and that journalist died in a Ukrainian prison. So tonight you will hear President Biden come into this House. And the one thing that President Biden has in common with the American people is that both were far better off 4 years ago. Joe Biden physically and the rest of us economically. Now, as a member of the House Armed Services Committee, I will call for an investigation of any efforts to drain U.S. reserves to go and fund this war in Ukraine, and I would invite my fellow members of the Armed Services Committee to join me. And Democrats, you know what this reminded me of? When all the Democrats were crying alligator tears about President Trump using DOD money to go fund the wall. And you may accuse me of hypocrisy now, because I supported President Trump in that endeavor, but I don't like the Biden administration going beyond what we set forth with our Article I powers. But at least if I'm being a hypocrite, I was doing so for the defense of America's borders and America's interests to stop an invasion that is killing hundreds of thousands of people through the introduction of fentanyl and an invasion that is diminishing the economic prospects of working people in this country. When they're hypocrites, Mr. Speaker, they serve as hypocrites so that they can go and fund the pensions of government workers in Ukraine. And not for nothing, but it wasn't that long ago that we found a person connected to the defense industrial complex in Ukraine exiting the country with $1 million in U.S. cash in a shoebox. The corruption is real, America's interests are illusory, and we should never drain $200 million out of our family or out of our army that should go to military families, that should go to soldiers, and that should go to America's capabilities. It is America's capabilities that will define whether or not we hold the high ground, not which guy in a tracksuit is running Crimea. I yield back. Welcome back to Firebrand. We are live. I just stepped off the House floor moments ago to give that searing critique of the effort from the Biden administration to drain our army, to drain our reserves and our resources, to go and facilitate whatever fantasy they believe they're fighting for in the Donbas region and in Crimea, adjacent to really what should be a European solution to this problem. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. It's State of the Union Day. And do you think it's a coincidence that on State of the Union Day, when there's so much news and so much information, that they chose this band of time to announce this illegal violation of our Article 1 powers to reappropriate these funds to Ukraine? It is not a coincidence. They are trying to do this while you're not looking. And folks on the live stream are fired up. Judy on Facebook says, no more money for foreign countries. Kelly on Facebook says no more money for Ukraine, shut down the border or shut down the government. William on YouTube with my favorite comment so far, if politics were a Western, Matt Gaetz would be Clint Eastwood. Well, we've got a real live hero joining us on the program. Captain John Frankman is from Florida's 1st Congressional District. He served as a Green Beret, and he's one of the thousands of Americans who have been negatively impacted by the vaccine mandate. And he is my guest for the State of the Union tonight because in Northwest Florida, the issues around our military are kitchen table issues. And when military families are harmed, it is my obligation as their congressman to see that their issues are pushed to the top of the list. And I will not rest until this vaccine mandate is not only just repealed, but there's accountability to the people for the people who did it. And there's reparations, back pay, and restoration of rank for our patriots who did nothing wrong. They did everything right. Their leaders failed them. Again, John Frankman served as a Green Beret. He's become an activist on this issue now in private life. And our great team here on Firebrand made a little video to introduce you to him. Take a listen. But now that you see how personal medical decisions are, will you call for the re-recruitment, restoration of full rank and back pay for the 8,600 service members who were vax mandated out of the military?
No, I won't.
Yeah, it's just kind of appalling that total double standard from the SecDef. I don't know a decision that Lloyd Austin has made that's helped strengthen the military. And Rep. Gaetz is right to talk about the 8,600 who were forced out. So I was a Special Forces Green Beret who was assigned at 7th Special Forces Group in 2020. I joined the military because I wanted to use the gifts God gave me to glorify Him and to serve my country. And first and foremost, I'm a Catholic. And I knew that these shots used aborted fetal cells in either the testing or production. So when that came out, I saw no need for the shot whatsoever. It went against my religious beliefs. It's involved in the murder of the unborn child. It's involved in the continued theft of its body part. And the fact that we're still using this in order to create this shot, another definition for sin is an act against reason. And even if you take the aborted fetal cell piece out, there is no reason to take this thing. If you have natural immunity, if you're young and healthy, if you've already had COVID. So it's very spiritual, especially when you're just going against reality as God had made it. After I put my religious exemption in, I lost out on deployments. My team time got cut short and wasn't able to advance my career by going to grad school and teaching at West Point, an assignment I was accepted to. So decided to leave and got out July 1st of 2023, which is when my additional duty service obligation, the 3-year commitment, was up for my Special Forces training. No matter what happened, if I had stuck around, even when the mandate was rescinded, I couldn't recover my career. It was irreparably damaged by the mandate. Congressman Gaetz and his office have been incredibly helpful in giving me a platform and in speaking on behalf of service members. His office originally got my op-ed published in the Floridian, and I had made a relationship with him a couple years ago when he had visited 7th Special Forces Group, and I was able to tell him in person the kind of persecution that was happening to my team and to service members around the country who were refusing the shot or didn't want to get it. And he's now speaking on behalf of service members by bringing it up into different congressional hearings. And him choosing me as his guest in the State of the Union, it's not just me he's choosing. He's also doing this on behalf of other unvaccinated service members, other service members who've been coerced into getting this shot and are now medically injured. The state of this country is, everything is worse. The military, the economy, and I expect to hear nothing but lies from Joe Biden. You don't kick out 8,600 service members, 50,000 plus because of COVID shot mandate, while there's three wars going on and it not being intentional. And I would just ask him, like, what are you doing for this country? Like, why are you basically destroying it? Who owns you? Our military leaders need to be held accountable. They need to be held accountable to the oaths that they take, to protecting those service members under them, to only carrying out orders that are legal and that support and defend the Constitution. And if we don't get the spiritual peace right, we're not gonna win this. We can't win this by just voting in the primary and in the general. We need to really reform our lives, turn back to God, come back to the faith, come back to the sacraments, but let's do this the right way.
We're back live and joined on the live stream by fellow veteran impacted by the negative vax mandate, Jordan Carr, also from Florida's 1st Congressional District. On our YouTube page, there appears to be a spirited debate breaking out about whether or not I should be vice president. Mr. Rude Boy correctly points out that the presidential nominee and the vice presidential nominee cannot be from the same state. So constitutionally ineligible, sorry, and I'm never leaving Florida. I'm a Florida man for life. We're joined now by John Frankman, and John, it is such an honor to have you here on Firebrand and really to have you as a representative for so many of our service members who were negatively impacted by this vax mandate. I want to get into how all that impacted you, but just first to introduce yourself to the folks who keep up with these updates, tell me a little bit about where you grew up, what life was like for you, and what led to your decision to join the military.
Yeah, so thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. And was born in Los Angeles, grew up in the DC metro area, and then went into the military. So kind of just moved all over the place. And big impacts for my life was my conversion to the Catholic faith. Became Catholic when I was in high school, later on pursued the priesthood for about 4 years, but had also loved the military and wanted to use the gifts God gave me to glorify him and serve him. And after I discerned that I was not called to the priesthood, I still owed the Army 4 years of active duty service from my ROTC scholarship. So went into the infantry, so did infantry school, ranger school, airborne school, decided to try out for special forces, so went to the selection and got through special forces qualification course, military free fall, and ended up down at 7th Special Forces Group.
That is a rapid journey through an incredible military career, but I want to zero in also on that decision to go special forces, because you're talking about the tip of the spear, the best of the best. I have a special place in my heart for the 7th Special Forces Group bed down in Crestview, Florida, as I made mention in my remarks on the floor. What was that test like, going through the rigors and the selection to become a Green Beret?
It was incredibly difficult, and Special Forces assessment and selection is kind of the big point where if you make it through there, you have a good chance of making it, and you have to try out before you even start the training. So there's a lot of fitness tests, IQ tests, personality tests.
What was the hardest for you? What was the one thing when going Special Forces when you're like, man, I really got to study a little extra, work a little harder to...
Land navigation. I was nervous about land navigation. I tried to do orienteering in Colorado to get myself ready. If I didn't get one more point, I probably wouldn't have got...
Is this like follow the North Star, you know, look which way the wind's blowing?
I wish it
sun
were...
rises in the east, sets in the west stuff?
All kinds of stuff. So it's night into day. You're supposed to find 5 points each day. It's like 10-hour blocks. You start at... what, 1 a.m, so 5 hours of nighttime, 5 hours of daylight, and you're just trekking, and you're carrying your rucksack, you're carrying your rifle, so just very grueling experience, and, you know, I was able to make it work, so happy to have been selected and then end up at 7th Group.
And your colleagues at 7th Group, these are folks from all over the country, every racial and ethnic background, different religious backgrounds. Tell me a little bit about your teammates and, you know, what kind of life was like day in, day out as a team guy.
Yeah, I loved it. So I got to 7th Group June of 2020. So obviously COVID was a weird time, but I could always already tell the freedoms from Florida versus North Carolina were amazing. But I had just an amazing team, and I love the guys, still love the guys. And day in and day out is tricky. It's easier to go off of what does the year look like. And it's from some individual training or language training to going out to the range and firing to getting to more complex kind of unconventional warfare, planning, training, things of that nature.
And so then, like, bring us to the moment where you first get notice or first start to believe that you're going to face a binary choice in your life. You're going to take this experimental vaccine, or you know, what you've worked toward, what you've trained toward, what you've accomplished is going to be taken from you.
When in January of 2021, the shot was coming out and it was made available for Special Forces service members and all soldiers. And we had a sign up, a voluntary sign up, before it was ever mandatory. And I saw that I was the only officer in my company who didn't get it. And there was a lot of downward pressure from the top saying that this is the important readiness issue. If you don't do this, you are a bad leader. And group commander even telling that to different company commanders even before it was mandatory. Then I saw that policies were changing in order to punish those who didn't get the shot even before the mandate was out, such as having to quarantine for a longer extended period of time. My team, we were easily the least vaccinated team in all of groups. We were known as the tinfoil hat team, team sergeant getting harassed by that. And ultimately, it turned into First Special Forces Command making it a policy where you have to be vaccinated in order to deploy. This is before the mandate came out. This was to a country that did not even require the COVID shot. And when my team lost that deployment, it was just culminating into just bad experiences happening. And this is even before the mandate.
And did you know right away this was something you weren't going to be able to do? Or did you go through some sort of deliberative process? Because I talked to a lot of people who would say, Congressman, I don't want to do this. I don't want to ruin my military career, though. And they would seek a health exemption. They would seek a religious exemption. Valid. According to law, they would get form letters back. They'd be enraged. But, I mean, I do know people who are coerced into taking the shot, who never wanted to, but weren't willing to give up their military career. How did you wrestle with that? How much time did that take? What did you do to arrive at the decision you did?
That's a great question. And, you know, first and foremost, I'm a Catholic. And when I found out that these shots use aborted fetal cells, I knew I couldn't just rush in and get them. I had to at least wait until it was a mandatory thing in the military. But as I continued to kind of form myself through moral theology, through studying and understand kind of the horror of abortion, the horror of these shots, that it's human embryo kidney 273, that implies that there were over 200 attempts to harvest these kidneys from these children, and there's machines to keep them alive while they are harvesting this part, that a disease that has over a 99.99% chance of survival does not merit me being involved in the sin of abortion. So I knew by probably June of 2021, I was never going to get the shot no matter what. They can throw me in jail, they can kill me, whatever. I'm just not going to do it because I would view that as a mortal sin for myself. I had tried to seek a religious exemption. My whole team, we were talking about medical exemptions because the military, in addition to violating our religious rights and or issuing an unlawful order for a shot that was never FDA approved available, they also violated their own medical policy. Because typically, if you've already had something and you can show you're inoculated, that you already have the antibodies, you can do that test and you can just show that and get a medical exemption. And my whole team that was there in October after we all, you know, we're not vaccinated, 10 to 12, and we're saying, what's the deal? We have this natural immunity. And also, what's the deal? You said that Comirnaty is FDA approved. There is no Comirnaty. There is only Pfizer. You can't, SecDef cannot mandate to us to take that shot. So it was a deliberate process. I tried to use whatever legal means were proper, whatever religious exemption, medical, and the decks were just stacked against people who didn't get the shot for whatever reasons.
What did the mandate do to cohesion and unity within these elite teams?
It absolutely destroyed it. And you have leadership that's pressuring guys to get this. And if you're a Special Forces Green Beret, you know, we do unconventional warfare. We are taught to ask those critical questions and to think critically. When we're asked to do something, oftentimes we ask why, or should we, or is there another alternative? And we were kind of told to turn off that critical thinking piece and to just go along because it was important for readiness. And it did. I love my unit and I love my leadership. And I think I had it a lot better than many others. But for other units, it was even worse, where you'd have battalion sergeant majors in front of their entire unit saying, if you've had the shot, you have the day off. If not, put a rucksack on. We're going through a grueling ruck march, which is complete, absolute illegal coercion. But yeah, it destroyed trust. We don't trust leadership right now. That's the basic thing. They said it was the big thing. Now the mandate's gone. We saw the shots don't work. We know people have been injured, and I've met so many vax-injured people. So yeah, trust is completely gone, and it irreparably harmed the country.
I don't even know that all vax-injured people know that they're vax-injured. I know people who took every shot, took every booster, would have gargled Johnson & Johnson if they were told to, and I've seen negative health consequences emerge with some of those people, and it's just sad to see that they're able to suspend disbelief regarding the potential of vaccine injuries. You've gone on to really build a community around the desire for accountability for this vaccine mandate, and I want to talk about what inspired you to do that. Was there, you know, you have another job, you're going to have a great life, but I know there are people who lost their marriages, whose families were negatively impacted, and who really didn't land on their feet after this, to be honest with you. What are the stories you think about that inspire you to continue the activism for accountability in terms of the harm caused?
I think about Carolina Stancic, who is a 23-year-old National Guardswoman who got two Moderna shots and for that has had three heart attacks and multiple other health issues. I think about Drew Outstanding, who he got the shots, he was doing Tough Mudders beforehand, and now he is paralyzed with Guillain-Barré syndrome. I think about my soldiers who did not want to get it and were coerced into doing it, and the kind of pressure that I saw that was pushed on them between their families with their own mental health. Right now, the military, it's going through, unfortunately, a huge suicide crisis. And I don't know how putting this kind of mandate. I think about Brianna Cespedes, who was an Air Force vet who's also involved in this activism. And she was put into quarantine for 140 days over the course of 2 years. This is
essentially jailed.
Oh,
I mean, you call it quarantine, but when someone confines you and you're not allowed to leave to a civilian, that sounds like a version of imprisonment.
Absolutely. And then she's kicked out with a general discharge. Fortunately, just got upgraded, but kicked out with a general discharge, which means that she can't get her GI Bill to go to school, that it affects her future employment opportunities. And just from like a pride point of view, is put there with like sexual offenders and other people who don't get honorable discharges, which it's very hard not to. So I think of all of these stories. I think about the great harm that's being done to our country, and I love this country. I love the military. I miss the guys. I ran into my old company commander my flight up here. It was great. Still love them. But what was done to the military, and even them trying to protect me as much as they could, it couldn't outdo the harms and the policies that were put in place from the top. And for that reason, we have the Declaration of Military Accountability, which
talk a little bit about that. Yeah, that there, you know, if you're a former service member, if you're someone who believes that we have to rally veterans around this cause. You guys have created a platform for that. Folks can find it at militaryaccountability.com, right?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, great. Well, so share a little bit about that project.
So the Declaration of Military Accountability was written by an active duty commander, Rob Green. He also wrote the book, Defending the Constitution Behind Enemy Lines, which greatly outlines kind of the problems and struggles that we've gone through this vax mandate. And what that letter outlines is that the military hasn't held themselves accountable. Our civilian leadership in Congress, for the most part, has not held them accountable. We are going to do everything that we can in order to hold leadership accountable. We name names in the letter, and we basically promise that there are people who are running for Congress and running into those political positions. If we get to that point, we are going to take your retirement pay away, and we're going to make sure you can't serve under senior executive service so that we can just stop this kind of filth. And we're trying to work and let the next president, please God, President Trump, know that he can appoint service secretaries that can bring these generals who broke the law off of retirement and put them onto active duty so that they can be court-martialed. And we're not calling for violence. We're calling for within
legal process.
Legal process between the legal, everything proper, legally, morally, in order to hold the military accountable.
And I don't get the sense that it's vengeance that motivates this. It's that if there's not accountability, this will happen again. If you're able to issue illegal orders, if you're able to send back form letters to people when they are laying out sincerely their religious objections to an experimental vaccine, we will be right back in this position and we'll be destroying thousands of lives going forward. And I hope that is the motivation for the signatories here.
100%. And, you know, the military is just our line of effort. That's just our piece of the pie. But in reality, COVID-19 and the policies in order to prevent the spread was the biggest infringement upon our personal rights within our lifetime, upon our liberties. And I know it's tough to go back to these dark places and these dark times and think about it, but if we don't go back and address the issues of what happened and learn from our mistakes, it will not be long until more and more of our freedoms are taken from us, until it's pushed for whatever globalist agenda and more federal power is given to them and taken from the people.
Lloyd Austin issued this order. The Congress corrected that mistake. Joe Biden signed a National Defense Authorization Act that literally reversed the decision of Lloyd Austin, but the pain from that decision is so real and so present. If you had a message to share with the Secretary of Defense, what would it be?
I would say just repent and try to fix whatever situation you have. Like, as a Catholic, I believe in forgiveness, but there has to be atonement for it. So it's not too late to come back to the right side, to reinstitute all these service members, to automatically raise their discharge statuses from general to honorable, to institute back pay, to a number of reservists. They missed out on years of drill. That means that they can't retire late as soon as they would have. So there's a number of things that are within his purview that he can do to fix this. And what he did harm the military. Make up for it. Redeem yourself. I don't know if he will, but that path is forward for him. So it's not to be like, we win and you lose. We want the country to win. We want service members to win. And there was real harm that was done. And there needs to be some real fixing for it in order for our military to be back and the strong fighting force that it once was.
What a gracious message. Repent, resolve, remediate. I oftentimes use a bit of a different message. I don't always portray that grace because my blood boils when I see these people with the great lives that they get to lead and the millions of dollars that they're going to make and all of the adulation that they undeservingly receive in these positions. And I think about those folks, some of whom I know, who you mentioned, who have experienced this harm. And on Morning Joe, they actually think, I'm too mean. I'm too insistent. I'm too cruel to the top officials at the Pentagon. Take a listen.
How many times did you go to a military ceremony, especially in the armed services, and you saw these young men and women that have committed their lives and their families have gone along and committed their lives to protecting and defending this country, and yet Donald Trump trashes them. You have that coach from Alabama that says they're weak and woke. You have Ted Cruz saying he'd rather us have Russian troops than American troops. All the insults from Republicans. You have Matt Gaetz going out of his way to trash leaders in the United States military. All of these people trashing our men and women in uniform. It's disgusting.
Oh, Joe, my predecessor, don't conflate those things. Do not dare conflate criticism of the senior officials at the Pentagon who are selling out our service members with the men and women of the military who we celebrate and we honor. And John, I did not serve in the military. I have such respect and admiration for those who do. And so when I get to ask questions of these senior leaders, I really try to take a moment and think, what would the service members in my district, what would not just them, but their families, what would a military spouse ask who's seen their loved one negatively impacted like this? And I don't know, you think I'm being too mean? You showed a lot more grace than I do.
So I did show grace, but that's the kind of, the cookie, or that's trying to get the carrot and you're using the stick. But the stick is necessary when they're not doing it. That's the gracious message. But if they're not willing to accept that, they absolutely need to be held accountable. And I don't think that any line of questioning that you're giving them, you know, sticks and stones will break bones, but your words shouldn't hurt them to that extent. And it's totally deserved. I can't think of a thing the SecDef's done to help the military. In fact, it seems like there's some intentional destruction of the military with DEI and woke policies and kicking out service members.
Right.
So, you know, if Morning Joe wants to know what's harsh is putting my career on ice where I can't deploy, go to career-enhancing schools. I can't, ironically, go teach ethics at West Point. That's the job I was prevented from doing, was PCSing to go to grad school and teach ethics at West Point. And that's just my story. But for the vaccine-injured people, for those who've been kicked out with general discharges, who've had their marriages disrupted from the pressure, for the disgraceful withdrawal from Afghanistan without a single person getting fired, it's insane, and leaving billions of dollars of equipment. I'll tell you what, if you lose a small piece of equipment within any kind of battalion, you have a flipple. You have an investigation, and people are charged money for it, but I haven't seen that for the billions of dollars of equipment left out there. So, no, you are not being too harsh. We need more people to be harsher on them, because if it's a military that is under civilian control, we want our representatives to actually exert that civilian control to keep them in line.
Well, and I feel the burden of that, because frankly, some lieutenant or captain or sergeant, there's a limited envelope as to what you can do to upward manage and to put pressure on those above you. And so those folks are my bosses, who are the, you know, the junior officers, the enlisted folks, the majors, lieutenant colonels, and colonels, who oftentimes just get smacked down by insane policy that is ill-conceived out of the Pentagon and the social justice warriors that run around this town. And so, you know, because so many of the service members we love are limited in what they can legally do to push back, I feel a deep obligation to be their representative, to be their voice, and to do those things. And, you know, it's not just you who lose out. Like, when you're unable to go teach that course at West Point, I think about all the people I nominate to West Point who get an appointment, and then they don't get the benefit of that teaching. Final question for you, John. Is the vaccine mandate just part of a bigger purge? You know, because I look at the DEI. I look at some of the wokeness. I look at just the incentive structure for promotion in the military. And I worry it's this bigger thing to try to get anybody who's independent thinking or traditional or conservative in their worldview to make a different choice than the military. And then I wonder what we're left with.
I think that's absolutely the case within the military, but I think it goes beyond the military. That right now we're having in mainstream media, in, you know, through the big search engines and things of that nature, just a kind of controlled speech where to have conservative thought is not allowed anymore, and there really isn't freedom of speech. So yes, it's a purging of the military, but it's a fundamental shifting of what we believe as a country, and we're making up new things. Like, communists like to divide based on certain lines of race and gender, and we're making up genders and other things to be divided about. So yeah, I think there's an absolute purging going on, not just within the military, but within the country, of what is deemed as acceptable speech.
And it's a shame. I don't want that. I actually don't want to purge the left from the country. I think we engage, we debate, we win, we showcase that our policies help people, make people more secure, more prosperous. And they seem to want to avoid that. And they want to seem to actually do harm to people who are not willing to conform. And I'm honored to have you here as my guest. I'm honored that you got a chance to spend some of your time in service in Florida's 1st Congressional District. Do all of us a favor in passing along our gratitude to the community that you represent and serve among those who've been negatively impacted.
Well, thank you so much for having me and having me. I know it's not just for me. This is for service members who've been impacted. So we'll continue.
Where can folks follow you online and stay up to date? I know you travel around the country. You work to elevate a lot of the voices around these issues we're discussing. And how can folks stay plugged
sure.
in?
Sure. I mean, well, before you follow me, I like to tell people follow Jesus Christ. But if you still want to follow me after that, you can find me at Johnny_Franks. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. And you can go to the Declaration of Military Accountability's website, sign the petition. You don't have to be in the military to sign it. That's at militaryaccountability.com.
Militaryaccountability.com. We would ask that you go there and review the great work that these patriots are doing. Again, it is State of the Union Day, and we expect President Biden to tell a lot of lies about the border. We were just debating border policy in the House Judiciary Committee this week when we were discussing a bill that would require the detention and then deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for robbery. We figure if there are illegal aliens engaged in robbery, they should not just be paroled back into the country under the fictitious legal status that Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas have created for them. Take a listen to that debate.
The problem with my colleague's debate is after these people are apprehended, they are paroled into the country. And so, yes, indeed, it's 5,000 people that we would allow to be apprehended, paroled throughout the United States. And that's where you are seeing this wave of migrant crime. That's where you are seeing jurisdictions like New York City think about their sanctuary status. I mean, I recall vividly a few things. I recall at the presidential debate when the question was asked, who would provide free health care to illegal aliens coming into the country? We all saw President Biden raise his hand. He was a candidate then, but that is a pull factor. When you tell desperate people that you're going to give them benefits and you're going to give them cash and you're going to give them shelter and you're going to give them food, I don't particularly blame the illegal aliens who are crossing the border to get those things. I blame the choices we've made in government to allow it. And the underlying legislation here at least says, I don't know if you're arrested for robbery, that there is detention and then there is deportation, that we don't have to invite all of the third world's prisons across our border into our nation and then allow the people in this country to be victims of that crime that occurs. I also vividly remember Secretary Mayorkas sitting right here in this committee room acknowledging that these people who were being paroled out into the country would indeed commit crimes. And the victims of those crimes have to be the collateral damage so that the Biden administration can allow the border to go unchecked, to go uncontrolled. And as we now try to create some deterrent to that illegal entry, it's interesting to hear my Democrat colleagues talk about just the need for more resources. Oh, if we just gave the Biden administration and Mr. Mayorkas more money, that would solve this problem. They are lawless in their use of the money they already have. They are taking what has already been authorized and appropriated it, and they have used it to disperse illegal aliens into these sanctuary jurisdictions all over the nation. And so giving them more money is sort of like saying if you have a busted fire hydrant, you can solve the problem with buckets. You indeed cannot. You have to shut off the flow. You have to shut off the flow of the people into this country. And this legislation has the very humble objective of ensuring that people who commit robbery do not stay here to do additional grave harm to our fellow Americans.
We're back live, and we have breaking news reporting from Barak Ravid. Breaking, Biden will announce at his State of the Union speech that he ordered the U.S. military to conduct an emergency mission to establish a temporary port in Gaza that would open up a maritime route for humanitarian assistance from Cyprus. This reporting from Barak Ravid. Well, here's the next phase. Now we're nation building in Gaza. We're building ports in Gaza. As the United States has become less economically resilient, as we've become more reliant on foreign countries and their medicines and their medical equipment, now we're building ports in other countries. This is how this flawed vision of nation building that frankly has been shared by a lot of these boomers from George Bush to Bill Clinton to Joe Biden. They all believe America is at our best when we are languishing economically and we are building up the capabilities of other places. This port that we're supposedly building, how are things going to go there? Is that going to be the subject of terrorism? Are we going to be inviting people into more grave harm? These Middle Eastern monarchies have so much money and they have so much capability. They are able to get humanitarian aid to Gaza. Okay, this is their neighborhood. By the way, we're ignoring a lot what's going on in Latin America in our sphere of influence. We're ignoring a lot about what's going on in the Western Hemisphere more broadly. But we've got now this ambition to go build a port in Gaza. This is not good. This is not going to lead to better conditions there. We also have an exclusive report on some of the work that we're doing to have some oversight and constraint on the power of Special Counsel Jack Smith in his election interference campaign. This exclusive to the Daily Wire. Matt Gaetz calls on DOJ Inspector General to investigate Jack Smith and specifically the springboards off of the analysis that we saw from Justice Amy Comey Barrett in the Supreme Court decision that disallowed Colorado from removing President Trump from the ballot. In that decision, Amy Comey Barrett noted that we are in the political season. We are in the political calendar. And it is not appropriate for this to proceed as an election interference endeavor. And undeniably, what was going on in Colorado was painted that way. There's not much more severe election interference than you can engage in than throwing someone off the ballot. But Jack Smith's getting pretty close. And it's clear from his filings that his intent is more driven by the upcoming presidential contest than it is the application of the facts or law and a just criminal matter. It's just not that. And it's something that the Inspector General ought to look at, and we are indeed calling on them to do just that, and they should. A final note, and I want to preface this as not a dunk, but as a learning opportunity. And look, we all can benefit from those. But I saw a press release that came out in support of this spending bill that we need to dive into. So the spending bills are way over the amount that we ought to be allocating. way over the amount that even Nancy Pelosi put on the floor when she was Speaker of the House. But if some members of Congress are able to get some pork barrel spending, some money from their district, if they're part of cooking up the deal that's a bad deal for the rest of the country, but good for them, then they take credit for it. And they hope that the macroeconomic collapse that they're contributing to, that they're financing, that they're underwriting, they hope that people and voters will ignore that for the shiny object. This press release from Congressman Jerry Carl of Alabama's 1st District. He says, I'm proud to deliver results for South Alabama and bring our tax dollars back home to reinvest in our communities. Wow, isn't that code for what's coming next? And the release continues. Today, I secured $30 million in funding for Alabama's 1st District while saving American taxpayers more than $200 billion over the next 10 years. So let's go with that savings window. Whenever Congress tells you that they're saving something over a 10-year window, it is your obligation to assess how much of that is front-loaded. Because here's what happens. They'll write a 10-year budget, and it'll say, well, over this 10-year window, we're going to save $200 billion. By the way, that's not saving $200 billion off of current spending. That's saving $200 billion off of some anticipated increase. So it's always still going up. And here's how they do it. They put all the pork, they put all the spending, they put all the nonsense on the front end of that 10-year window, and then all of the cuts, all the savings, well, you know, that starts in year 7, 8, 9, 10. It's a joke, and it's insulting. And so for someone to say, well, because I got $30 million for my district, that justifies selling out the country, paving the way to $50 trillion in debt during that very same budget window. It's not something that I think voters will abide. It's not something the country should abide. And it's noteworthy that on Tuesday, despite having considerably more resources for campaigning, despite being geographically advantaged, Jerry Carl was defeated in the primary for Alabama's 1st Congressional District by fellow Congressman Blake Moore, who had been redistricted into Alabama 1. And even on the heels of that defeat, to see Congressman Carl, a Republican from Alabama, touting the $30 million, being deceptive about the cuts over the course of some illusory 10-year window, it's exactly why candidates like this are losing, even when they have more money, even when they have more advantages, because the American people are able to distinguish the true fighters from the sellouts and the fakes and the phonies. Thanks for being here with us. To help decipher that for yourself, make sure that you are subscribed on whatever platform you're using to get these updates. We suggest downloading the Rumble app, turning those notifications on. That way, whenever we go live, whenever we've got great guests like Captain John Frankman, you are the first to get the information and the first to be most informed. Thanks again. Roll the credits.